Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio.
I'd like to mark Nelson Mandela Day, which was celebrated across the world on July the 18th, a date established by the United Nations in 2009 as a call to action for people everywhere to take responsibility for making the world a better place. I'd like to do this by sharing with you the final part in a series by the title of Apartheid and After, a result of a UNICEF-sponsored fact-finding mission to South Africa, which took place 2 years after Mandela had been elected as president of this nation in 1994. A journey which took me, among other places, to the southwestern township of Soweto. And if you stay tuned, you can hear the witness of three different generations of black South Africans, and also that of a white Maurice brother.
I remember as kids, we didn't know anything about ANC and Tambo, anything.
Was also involved with the Mandela group and all that, and sometimes I went also hiding.
We can forgive people, but not to forget.
These are the voices of three different generations of black South Africans. Peter Dada, a 58-year-old man from Soweto who struggled against apartheid all his life. Pinky Vilakazi, who belongs to the generation of township students that brought the apartheid system to its heel. And Queenef, a 16-year-old, old enough to know the meaning of apartheid.
I remember as kids, we didn't know anything about ANC and Tambo, but the way the community, everybody made sure that children grow up knowing there's Nelson Mandela, there's Oliver Tambo. Just to know there are such people on earth was one of the best things to keep us hoping.
Was also involved with the Mandela group and all that, and sometimes I went for hiding when policemen were harassing us and chasing us around to be arrested. So I went to Portuguese East Africa by then, before Maputo, and I stayed there for 2 weeks and tried to come back again, and I only find the message that the policemen still are looking for me. Then I went to Botswana, where I spent another 2 weeks there. But home sweet home, you always look forward to come back.
You think you owe something to these people who died in the struggle against apartheid?
Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. We have to respect them, we have to remember them, because those are the people which they strive very hard to see that we get into this freedom.
Haven't you got any anger?
Not at all. No, no. We should forgive and forget and start afresh. Moreover, the young ones, they are going to take over. They're the future of tomorrow. We already, time it's expired. We won't enjoy anything. They are going to enjoy the fuller democracy country more than we.
Yeah, definitely. I think a person should forgive but never forget. Someone asks you to forget, that person is asking you to like give up something. So I think we can forgive people but not to forget.
Three generations of black South Africans recounting their personal stories there, but that prompts the question, where were the white South Africans while the struggle against apartheid was underway? And where was the Catholic Church?
Apartheid was so successful in so many ways. It isolated you from so much in the country. I mean, many people today say, you know, where was I when these things were happening? It's difficult even to understand that question, because people struggle with that question themselves. Where was I when these things happened? What was I doing at that time? I think it was only in the late 60s, early 70s that I started to get a consciousness of what was going on in this country, strange as that may seem. I mean, it took us from the middle of 1975 through until 1989 to get the school situation actually recognized by the government. Certainly in the mid-70s, there was no certainty about being successful on this at all.
Brother Jude Peterson expresses a sense of surprise, almost of disbelief, one shared by black people as well.
Pinky was convinced that the apartheid system would never crumble, although her own daughter of 9 has adapted so easily that she makes her own mother feel embarrassed. You'll see why. Like everyone else, Pinky never imagined she'd live to see Mandela free.
see him go out was just such a disempowering event, to the extent that I never thought I would see this moment. I thought maybe my children or my grandchildren. Both my kids have not been exposed to sort of black and white issues as my husband and I were, especially the little one. Sometimes I don't even think she realizes that she's black.
Today, Pinky's children belong to an all-new generation of South Africans. They go to integrated schools with high achievement results. But Pinky's careful to say this is not the rule. She tells me with dismay that the first school her 12-year-old daughter went to was the same one she and her husband fought so hard to improve.
I always think I'm part of the whole transitional phase in South Africa. As a young student, I'm one of those people who throw stones and all those things. So I've seen some of it, though not it all. I mean, we threw those stones, I saw my friends die, my own colleagues in the classroom. But I think back like they happened yesterday. There was no way you could say it's for the political thing. We didn't take it as political. We were just fighting our own students' wars, though the whole thing just spread like fire. So growing up, getting married one day to my husband, whom I met in the same university, throwing stone with him, having my first daughter, one day having to take her to a school, the same desk that my husband sat on, the same broken windows, no doors. Can you imagine what it made me feel as a parent? What did I achieve? I didn't see the change. All the things are still seen in black and white. There's not going to be any miracle. More than anything, we also need patience, because people just thought the inauguration of the president will just change everything. And unfortunately, that's not true. With all the resources, with all the willingness, with all the good intentions, nothing is going to be achieved overnight.
But still, people like Peter Dadla and his generation consider that something has changed since the days of apartheid, when you couldn't even sleep at night.
It was difficult because you couldn't sleep, because you've been searched, we've been keep on being hunted by police. If you're running and they said stop, you don't stop, you could be killed. It's better when it's daytime more than nighttime, because nighttime is where you get the most policemen searching, going each and every house looking for whatever pamphlet, newspaper they could find concerning about struggle or anything. Even some other books which I had, I'll have to just burn them and forget about them. Funny enough, now you could see those books they've been reading in the street all over.
They were all white policemen who used to chase you?
A lot of white, and some dangerous black, but most of the blacks, they used to kill them once they could see them around in our place.
The black policemen used to be killed by you?
Yes, the black policemen will be killed instantly.
Do you think this violence was justified?
It's not at all. It's not at all. It's something behind it. It's not that black people, they would like to kill each other. It's some other bad element which they go in and then they start to fight. Moreover, like these whites which are being arrested, because they will paint themselves, make themselves black and come into the place where the black stays and start to shoot around people, and then later on then they will have that gossip left behind that these are the other people on the other side trying to kill you. So then that will be black to black.
I think somehow apartheid had worked very hard on making us feel very dehumanized, very incompetent. Just the mere skin of your color would make you the most hopeless thing on earth. Not capable. I'm sure you'd remember the mind guy, Ari Paulus, who went on public to say the black skin has no mind inside, it can't think. So some of those things were so demoralizing that somehow, if you hear those lies over and over again, maybe you'd end up believing that there's something wrong with this color. But very soon I started believing that, boy, I'm beautiful, I'm capable of anything that anyone can do.
Looking at the apartheid legacy, what has been achieved has gone down in history. But one can't help asking oneself, what if Mandela had died in prison?
And as an elder student now in university, my fear was that if he could die in prison, if there would be the worst of wars. Nobody would stop anybody. If it had happened during the 70s, people were just saying, each time he would be admitted to hospitals, the student would just say, let him die there. Then you'll get what you were asking for.
Mandela, he came in at the right time, where we were just looking forward that maybe we might not see what we are seeing today. Instead, it was going to be a real a bloodbath.
What about the future?
Oh, the future is holding a lot, as I can see, because now we've got a free democratic country, you do as you please, but I think we're quite living in a better place that we never expected to live in.
What do you think of white people?
Well, I think of white people equally because I've got white friends, and I enjoy their company more than African people because we've got some differences and you share different personality and so that I like most about whites.
Has something really changed? Really, really changed?
Yes, a lot. Because since the democratic elections and everything, we can speak to people, work together. I think it's very nice.
I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio.